If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wowee.
He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Well, welcome to the latest edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. My name is Lauren Wood. I'm joined by Michael Warner and Scott Gullen with Ando to join us a little bit later on with a very special guest. Mick, it's Hall of Fame week, even though it doesn't look like it has in recent years, one of the great nights on the footy calendar. It's still an exciting week to be part of.
G'day, Lauren and Scotty. Yeah, I didn't know that John Kennedy Sr. wasn't already a legend. So we had the debate last week. Kennedy was an absolute no-brainer, wasn't he? And I think we spoke a while ago about how at halftime in, was it the 1971 grand final, Ando's better at this, that St Kilda and Hawthorn had won the same number of premierships, one. And right through that era, yeah, Kanga Kennedy. Do you remember the footage of those military-style training pre-season camps that they would have and that booming don't think, do voice? Absolute moral to go in, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was a weird one, wasn't it, Scotty? Like it sort of slipped everyone by. As Mick mentioned, there was Carey, Ablett, all those sort of names, Dunstall. But I think everyone just already thought he was in.
Well, yeah, I blame the AFL just for a change. We might as well. I mean, as our listeners might know, these things are a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. We don't get told the names, but generally if someone's writing a preview, you have an idea of who might be in the running. So poor old the Chief keeps writing about Wayne Carey and Gary Ablett. He's going to be doing it for every year for the next 10. Surely some of the AFL could have gone, oh, by the way, there's a few absolute living legends who aren't in there for some reason. I don't know why. Why wasn't Kanga in there 10 years ago?
Yeah,
interesting. So I was pleasantly surprised, like everyone. I mean, of course he's a legend. Great story. It was wonderfully written by Mark and others. But the confusion in the lead-up, we get ourselves all worked up about Gary Ablett or, you know, is it time to forgive sins of the – all those debates. But we're going to have him every year. It drives me nuts.
He was also the AFL commission chairman.
It was one of those ones too where, you know, obviously, unfortunately, the family – couldn't attend. But as you say, Scotty, it would have been nice if for everyone that's writing the preview stories, a bit like when awards are getting given out, perhaps you should maybe attend if you're going to give away. Someone could have potentially said, oh, why don't you throw Kennedy's name in there? But I think Fox have done it really well in that they're wheeling out. Obviously, we had John Kennedy and Lenny Hayes last night, much loved figure inducted into the Hall of Fame, wheeling out a few more across the next three nights of the inductees. But it was a shame, wasn't it, particularly at John's age, and it sounds like he's been going through a few health troubles in recent years, that all the family couldn't get together and celebrate the night as it should have been.
But you mentioned Lenny Hayes. We've got to talk about him. There's not many opposition players that are universally loved like Lenny. He's very courageous. Remember that bump of Glenn Archer when he was a kid? And even the way he reacted, he just got up, didn't remonstrate. He was a magnificent player and obviously a great bloke.
He could be the nicest player to ever play nearly 300 games. Like, have you ever seen him say a bad word about anyone? Great to the media.
His mates reckon that he's got a very great public persona, but if you meet him...
It's a fake.
Well, not a fake, but...
It's a facade, Michael.
You don't play 300 of inside midfield football by being a flower.
I understand
and
on the
he
field.
He can hold his own in the banter stakes, that sort of stuff.
He's, wow. Yeah. Breaking news.
Great.
Lenny's not the angel he was. This is a headline.
Wow.
Who's the current day Lenny Hayes, who's a universally admired player? I can think of a guy on the halfback line at Carlton.
Halfback line at Carlton?
Cade Simpson, who I think everyone... Simpson.
But yeah, but he's not admired in the Lenny Hayes Warrior.
Oh, well, not the Warrior, no. But I think I haven't heard many bad words said about Cade Simpson.
You can find a few like that. But
Sean
Burgoyne,
maybe?
Yes, a great example. Great example. Silk.
Yeah. No, he's tough old Lenny. Oh, you sort of, not that you forget these great players, but reading Macca's story in the Tuesday Herald Sun and, of course, all the associated, flow out content that comes from Hall of Fame nights, but the playing 14 years with a hole in the heart, astounds me still to this day, and that he, you know, Lenny sort of in that, oh, well, I didn't want to sort of bother anyone kind of way, just played through it. It's incredible to think these days of, you know, the testing that players are put through before they're even drafted. Mm. That sort of stuff just doesn't really happen gets anymore. And but,
I'll always remember his goal from outside 50 in the he never kicked a goal from outside 50 until he willed himself in that drawn grand final, well, Scotty and Lauren. You particular, Lauren?
Another standout moment from that particular game, which I actually went back and watched after he was announced on Monday night, was, of course, the speech on accepting the Norm Smith medal from the game of the, oh, you'll have to excuse my voice here. But, we'll see you next. That was just, he must have copped the biggest chop to the throat. And obviously the noise of the crowd, they were all shouting their absolute heads off all day. But he's pretty iconic, isn't he?
Well, that's it. He's the forgotten Norm Smith, because we sort of, from that game, we remember Milne and the bounce of the ball, and then you remember Collingwood and Pendlebury. One at Pendlebury. Yeah. You forget that Lenny Hayes single-handedly carried St Kilda to, as I like to repeat to you, Lauren, a flag they failed again, and Footscray naturally now have two.
I did have many messages from people after Lenny was inducted last night because, of course, so many magnificent photos flow onto the social media sphere after his induction of him getting carried off. I think he had Nick Riewoldt on one side, Stephen Baker on the other, which is a bit of a height disparity, and Cozzy there too. And the number of messages I had from people saying, I still can't believe this side never won a flag. And I wrote back the same thing to everyone. You're telling me.
If they hadn't sacked Grant Thomas, they would have got a couple, I reckon. Not nothing against Ross, but that was one of the worst decisions in the history of the Nakatomi Corporation.
Well, Tomo was a unique unit, as we know, but the players loved him and the key players played for him.
Yeah, they're on their way.
Yeah, they dismantled that at the wrong time because of egos, Michael. Egos, presidents, football clubs, boards.
Oh, I'd love a dollar for every hour I've spent thinking about what could have been.
Liniment sniffers, Scotty. Oh.
Yeah. We need a top 10.
Anyway.
Oh, yes, I like that.
Oh, I've got a few. Yeah, all right. Yes. Continue.
Let's move on to the actual liniment, I suppose, is probably the ultimate segue there, because the footy, of course, is starting in 9 days' time from memory. Of course, I should probably know that because I did the story with David Neitz in today's paper. So I should, of all people, know how many days to go. But as is always the way, Mick, the footy starts and the politics start too. Your story in the Tuesday Herald Sun regarding player pay cuts, just as we thought, things were looking like a united front heading into this long-awaited season reboot, We love a bit of a stoush, don't we? And it looks like we might have another one on our hands very soon.
Well, I think we're always going to have one, actually. You remember 3 months ago when the AFLPA and the AFL struck a pay deal for this year in about a week, which was an amazing effort, which ended up being pay cuts of 50% if there was footy on and 70% if we didn't have any footy, which thankfully that's not going to happen. But this is all about how much of the players going to be paid next year and the year after. There's 2 years to go on the salary cap. Now, the players did agree to a review of the CBA during that conversation 3 months ago. But what they're saying now, and I think quite rightfully, is that they would like to see the full state of affairs of the AFL's finances, i.e. get them to open up the books, which is something that they've been reluctant to do for probably 20 years. To show the players, and the clubs are on board with this too. It's not just the players. Everyone wants some transparency. What is the state of footy's finances? And look, there will be, it will get tense. It will drag out. but in the end they always get a deal. And I think there's an argument that the players probably won't take as big a haircut as the clubs or the coaches have taken, whether that's right or wrong, whether the coaches association have fought hard enough for their members. It's a very interesting time, but I think that in the end you're looking at around about a 10 to 15% pay cut for players.
So what's the reticence of the AFL? They just always like to keep their secrets in-house so they don't want people poking around their books. Is that what their stance is?
Well, one line you always hear is that clubs are concerned about the financial confidentiality of how they do business. So that's a nice little thing to hide behind. Maybe there's an element of that in some aspects, but I think the clubs as well are saying they just want to see the extent of the expenditure, you know, international rules, AFLX, you know, salaries. I think the days of the secret salaries, et cetera, are over, guys. So there will need to be a level of transparency that we've never seen before.
Peter Gordon, Michael, he certainly threw a grenade in there.
Well, I didn't think it was a grenade, but it was sort of presented that way, wasn't it, by Caroline Wilson. I thought what he said made a lot of sense. The clubs on the bread line that have received the biggest handouts are going to have to display some accountability going forward.
So they should.
100%. So, and it, look, there's already a PR battle. You can see on Footy Classified, players were being belittled for wanting Nutribullets in their hotel rooms. And I don't see what's wrong with Nutribullets, to be honest. That's something you need to make a nice smoothie for yourself. You're a professional athlete. I've got no problems with Nutribullets.
Well, if you're getting shipped to the other side of the country, away from your family, to ask for a table tennis table, I think that's okay.
Designed to make them look like they're selfish, overpaid footballers.
We don't get used like that, Michael.
I was going to get to this a little bit later, but you've let us in there beautifully, Mick. So we'll go to it now. Look, I can confirm that the toasted sandwich maker has basically carried me through the last 2 months of isolation. It has been a very big feature in this household. So I say all power to the players if they want toasted sandwich makers in their rooms. I can't say I'm in the same boat as Joe Danaher and Patrick Cripps of these I dropped 6 kilos in ISO stories. If I read another one of those, I think I'm fairly and squarely the opposite after plenty of toasted sandwich rather than the Nutribullet. But I think it's fair. I mean, this sort of stuff about shipping in PlayStations and pool tables, well, they're going to need things to do. I actually found it stunning, Mick, that they're going to be allowed to play pool on a communal pool table and yet not play golf still.
Oh, yeah, the golf's outrageous. They'll be able to play golf, surely. But in the memo, that as well as the CBA, Paul Marsh did talk about, and this might have got lost, probably because I wrote the story and didn't add it in, but I should have. Now I think about it, the memo talks that the West Coast Eagles, Fremantle and the two South Australian teams don't want to be in these hubs for more than 4 weeks. Now, how's that going to work if we get to 4 weeks and the border restrictions haven't been eased in either of those two states? Are we looking at a situation where the season is going to go into November?
Possibly even later, because if they're sort of saying that they'll go in for 4 week blocks, what's the suggestion that they'll go home for a week and then go back?
Yes, that they want to go home for a week. So the AFL would be desperately working behind the scenes to hope that they only have to be there for 4 weeks anyway. Borders open up, they can go home and play home matches. But I don't think we're over the hurdles in terms of getting this season back flowing.
Isn't it more likely that South Australia lifts before Western Australia? The Western Australian guy seems just enjoying making life difficult for the AFL.
Yeah, but even if only two clubs, Scotty, have to have a
I know what you mean. It's a delay, yeah.
The whole season's that sort of a...
Well, I think we're going to... The draw's just going to be eked out in six-week blocks. I think that's just... We're attuned to it. And as Gil kept saying, we've got to be agile. It's an asterisk season. Let's just roll with it and... What did you think of the NRL? I tuned in and watched a bit. It sucked me in a little bit, actually. The crowd noise was okay. Some was a bit odd, but I think it sort of worked.
Yeah, I loved it, the crowd noise. I thought that was really, gave a lot more atmosphere on the couch than the footy that I watched in round one of the AFL. And this new rule that they've got,
you get
extra six tackles. I know it's not a popular thing to praise Volandis. We're meant to kick him to death down here. That's the way that the the AFL media mafia would like it to be. But he is running rings around the AFL at the moment, that bloke.
What about crowd by July 1?
In rugby?
Yeah, that's what he's declared.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw him walk across Sydney Harbour.
What about
the cardboard cutouts, boys? I'm very keen to get your views on this. Would you have one of yourselves? I don't mind it personally. I think it's fraught with danger, as we've seen in recent days. But yeah, it's a bit of fun. We can all have a bit of a laugh at the moment, can't we?
You can, but not as a football journalist. I don't think you should be having.
I expect to see you fair and square in the middle of the Tiger Army, Mick.
Scotty, does on it, the other hand, I think.
Oh, I could easily do it. Does it add to the TV that we see, though? I think the noise was more important than seeing a few things on the – a bit of fun, but costs money. Clubs don't have money unless you get free.
I think it's a fundraising initiative, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, fundraising initiative from the clubs, you would imagine by the members. But it sounds like the AFL may differ a little. Hearing Steve Frawley, of course, the head of Fox, talking about how it's going to look in AFL. The crowd noise, he described it as warming the broadcast, which I would agree with. I didn't sort of notice it at the start, and then it was only that I sort of went, oh, yeah. But I think it sounds like they're going to shoot the AFL quite tight on the players so that you won't necessarily actually see that much of the crowd. So I think fundraising opportunity is the best way to put it, Mick. But clubs are just doing whatever they can to keep hold of their members at the moment, aren't they?
I know Barmy's not in the 25 at Richmond, but surely they've got to get him and plonk him in the stand like round one.
Oh, yeah.
If there's not someone at Richmond right now formulating a Barmy army for one of the maybe even Bay 13, they're not doing their jobs properly.
Who captivated that coverage?
Could we have cardboard cutouts of Nutri bullets and big bags of cash and just sort of
giant toasted sandwich makers?
I like that.
Very quickly, back to footy, we've got a great interview coming up. Ando's catching up with Hawthorn great Peter Hudson, of course, on the back of John Kennedy Sr. being elevated to legend status in the Hall of Fame, which we covered off earlier. So just before we get to him, a few sort of footy issues, boys, just keen to get your views because everyone seems to have one on this bloke, of course, talking about Sydney forward Lance Franklin. And those hamstrings, where do you sit? Do you sort of buy the talk about contracts and value to the Swans at this point, Mick, as he looks to get over this latest hurdle, of which he's had a few?
Well, he's the best player I think I've ever seen live in just terms of how phenomenal the athlete. When he's in full flight, buddy, there's no one that gets near him. And if the Swans had to pay $9 million $10 million over 9 years to get him, absolutely it was worth it. It was interesting to hear Derm say that Hawthorn knew that his body would be shot at this stage, and I think it was his old fitness boss said he should lose some kilos. And that's, they all may be correct, but Buddy's been worth every cent. However, if he is finished at now, which I assume he's not, that would be a conversation because he's got 3 years to go, has he not, Scotty?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Absolute win. Marketing, got him to grand finals, all that. He's done everything he needed and more. How's the outrage police, though, going? We know the footy needs to start. If Andrew Russell is asked a question, what do you think of Buddy?
That's the truth.
He answers the question because he's had a long-time relationship with it. He says the answer. Then, lo and behold, the outrage police. Oh, no, that's a rival club. Come on, people. Seriously.
Well, John Longmire didn't seem all that pleased with it either, did he? What did he say? It was inappropriate.
He's the Dennis Pagan. They've been brought up with this. Oh, don't tell us what to do. Come on. I guarantee your buddy's talking to Andrew Russell on the phone going, mate, what will I do? Because I can't walk around the block without tearing my hammy off the bone.
Well, Andrew Russell's one of the best in the business, so you'd have to think that if Lance Franklin, who's got a long-standing relationship with him, isn't talking to him at this point, he's probably not doing his due diligence. But we'll keep a very close eye on how Buddy's tracking in coming weeks as the season looms, as I say. Caught our eye last night. I know you boys are big on your social media, so it wouldn't have slipped you by. Chad Wingard. We don't see self-imposed media bans often. It's an incredible situation, obviously, unfolding in America, and I think it's just shocked everyone the world over. But Chad's obviously incredibly passionate about the issue, Scotty, and isn't looking to do any interviews from here on in.
I was bemused. Look, you can have your thoughts. I mean, we all understand how horrible it is in America, but you're an AFL player in Australia linking media coverage over here to what's happening there. I just think it's a very long bow to draw. It's self-imposed media ban. I just think it's ridiculous, to be honest.
It is frightening, though, isn't it, this footage, what we're seeing?
Oh, of course.
Takes a lot to get me sort of to take a second look usually. And I was looking at some of that stuff and thinking, what is happening in America? Chad's obviously, like all of us, emotionally
But what's the media ban? Explain what a media ban, what message is that? What's he trying to
tell us? As we know, the debate is about fake news and the media not trusting. I think
Australian rules football.
He's entitled to his view. The only thing I'd say to him is use the media to get your message across.
I would agree.
Thank you, Michael.
And I think that's been I don't know whether mentality is the right word, but that seems to have been the thinking of quite a lot of players in recent years, that to educate and to have the platform to be able to educate and spread that message is so important. As I sit here Tuesday lunchtime, I've actually just returned home from St Kilda, where Bradley Hill spoke at a press conference, and he, of course, was asked about it. And his initial response was that that's Chad's view, and yeah, I respect him, and you know, he's entitled to his viewpoint. But of course, Bradley, he's a proud Noongar man, the Indigenous family there, and he spoke about how it had really affected him. He spoke that it hit to his heart, and that he actually used a really strong line it really, really hit me, where he said, this isn't about blacks versus whites, it's about everyone versus racism. And I thought that was really powerful, and used a weekly press conference in his role as a footballer to spread a really important message. And isn't that what it should be about?
Totally agree.
But Chad's sort of done that in a way as well, by making a stand. He's got his point across. So
yeah.
It's a tough one.
You got to respect his views. That's his thought. Now, just very quickly before we get to the famed whisper from the Superscorer himself, Scotty Gullen, Brownlow medalist and Fox Footy Jared Healy spoke about an interesting one, about the minimum kicking distance. Just to go really full footy on your boys, just 9 days out from the season. He wants it increased from 15 metres to 30 metres to stop players chipping the ball around. Here's what he had to say about the issue.
I've always believed that if you can handball the ball 15 metres, you shouldn't be rewarded with a mark for a kick of the same distance. And to me, if we had to kick the ball 30 metres, you may just find that we're kicking the ball longer and we're not actually stopping and we're not having the chip kick. It's the chip kick is very much part and parcel of strategy, but the chip kick has been aggravating people since Rex Hunt went chip, 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 chip.
Right, so 15 to 30. Do you actually think it will make a difference, Scotty?
Look, I think play on. Oh, okay. 30 metres, that's unrealistic. Stop tinkering with the game is my initial thoughts. I don't think he can pull that off. You know, play on if you kick behind, those sort of things work. 30's a long way. A long way. Some footballs can only kick 30 metres. So it's No, I don't think. I think we need the footy to start.
My mind went, Scotty, to, I don't mind the idea, but my mind went straight away to, okay, what if there's 10 seconds to go and we've got the ball 70 out and I find a pass like 25 metres away and it's called play on, and say every action has a reaction. The only thing I'll say, it's not a bad rule idea, because there's been some absolute stinkers, including the starting positions last year, which was just an absolute joke, that actually sent scoring south. They said it'd go up 14%. So these rule makers can't be trusted. But the one thing that absolutely brought me to tears of joy was this news during the week that 16-minute quarters are going in the bin forever next year. And you had radicals like Eddie Maguire saying we've got to tear up the game and create this T20-style Netflix garbage so that kids of today can concentrate and watch footy. That is crap. 20-minute quarters is what we need, plus time on. That's what the broadcasters want. Thank God for that. That was the one I was most concerned about. So all this other stuff, I'm not – look, 16 aside worries me as well.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Yeah, why are we reducing the amount of players who can play the game?
Scotty, when you saw that 18-metre goal square, anything was possible.
That is one of your all-time favourites. So all these people who are employed and need to try and justify jobs aren't there anymore, Michael, and it's a streamlined AFL sort of think tank. And you, we don't get before these crazy stuff.
We don't need a competition committee. I mean, what is that? No. It's the decision-making by consensus. You got a job to do, Steve Hocking, do it. You don't need all these presidents sitting around talking about ripping off Band-Aids and God knows what else. Peter Gordon said it best. He said, right now there is far too much change going on in the world to change AFL. Something we can go back to as a safe harbour that we loved as a kid, recognise in its current state. And you can stick your Nike Grand Final as well.
All right. Well, that'll do us on to in terms of the issues of the week. Scotty, you've handed over the reins of the Super Score this week from your Surf Coast abode, but we're still going to task you with our favourite elements of it, and that is the whisper. Have you got anything for us that you've dug up from down there by the beach?
Yeah, even during my freshen up, things still pass my desk, Lauren. Now, Royal Burnley, it's not renowned as one of the great golf tracks of Melbourne.
Royal and ancient, Bernie. Royal
We've all frequented it at times, though. We
have
walked the hallowed turf of Royal Burnley.
But you feel good if you can drive a par four. <isn't it? laughs>
Well, there were some stunned locals who were just pottering around having a chip and a putt when a powerful foursome strode onto the first. And let's just say their wealth would have been able to buy the golf course and probably save the AFL. All I'll say is the unusual foursome was maybe a bit of bonding, trying to regroup and chart a path forward. One particular club, possibly out near the airport. So that's all I'll say. But it was a very interesting foursome. Let's just say that.
Wow.
The quarantine quartet. There you go. I wonder if they played the nine or went the double round to complete the full 18.
A stunning choice of venue was the most alarming thing. Royal and Ancient Burnley.
Hiding in plain sight. The best disguise of all. There you go. See, it just goes to show you really do have people everywhere.
The fact they landed a helicopter on the practice green was a bit of a
gave a bit away. But more on that fantastic next week.
Fantastic work by you. Further. We do love the whisper and we'll be keeping a very close eye. As I say, on the Super Score in your absence, a few of us have been tasked with that at times. So I'd like to say that it's in safe hands, but, you know, who really knows? We need you back next week, Scotty, so you'll be back at the helmet.
Good to be loved.
It is one of our much-loved sections of the Herald Sun magazine, as it were, with 9 days to go. But it's time for our great friend Ando, John Anderson, a regular on this podcast. He's caught up with Hawthorn great Peter Hudson. It is Hall of Fame week, after all. We spoke about John Kennedy Sr. a little bit earlier, and Peter's going to pay tribute to his former coach, given his elevation to legend status in the Australian Football Hall of Fame.
as a kid, I just wanted to play football, you know. But the best thing you take out of football is the people you meet, the friends you make.
My friends say that they saw me play and it wasn't a pretty sight. That's about the best description I could give of it.
And Hawthorn are premiers for the year 1961.
Here's John Kennedy being patted by his plane, being hugged and kissed with no reservation. That's a lovely sight to see.
And at least do something! Do! Don't think, Mick! Don't hope! Do! At least you can come off and say, I did this! Or I shivered it! Or I played on! At least I did something for the sake of the side. Do! Act! Don't think, act! Eye on the ball! I'm game enough to tell you to do it. Are you game enough to back me up?
How do you come up with a different speech that they haven't heard before?
Now, you've got to think of a thousand different ways of saying the same thing.
Fight it out hard, every bloke. Run until you drop. The psychological limit is a lot closer than the physical limit. Remember, when you're tired and you think you can't go any further, you can. Do it and see how you go.
Who better than to welcome John Kanga Kennedy as a legend of the AFL Hall of Fame, than a fellow legend in Peter Hudson, who first met him, I'm thinking, Peter, 54 years ago?
A long time ago, John, at least 54 years ago.
So you came over in, what, late 66, and he would have been your coach that first year in 67.
Yes, yeah, he was my coach right through until 1977 when David took over, David Parker.
And John, was your first meeting with John Kennedy, were you a nervous young bloke meeting such a great figure?
Probably not so much nervous, John, because I met so many people, so many new people. And coming from Tasmania, yeah, I was in awe of just about everybody because of the fact that they, all the players were VFL players, which, you know, I hoped one day to become. And you know, a lot of the people around the club were very high profile, very influential sort of people, and you're sort of meeting one after the other. And then, of course, you know, the great honour of meeting the great John Kennedy. And the tricky thing at that stage, John, was the fact that I wasn't eligible to play in the first game of the year. So Morton Brown actually played full forward in that first game, and then I played my first game at Carlton in the second round of that year. So it was sort of playing the practice matches, kick as many goals as you could. And that's pretty much what John Kennedy was on about. I mean, if you're a full forward and you get picked a full forward, you're expected to keep goals. I think that was the philosophy.
I've got a memory of going to Glenferrie and half the ground was vacated and you were up on a goal square with your opponent, whoever that might be. Was that John's plan?
Yeah, very much so. I think he what he worked on was your strengths and your weaknesses, and I think he looked at me as, you know, my number one asset was using my body. But then I think we had another one, a huge asset in the side, apart from the Crimmins and Keddies and Mars and those sort of people. We had this fellow that came along and put him in the centre of the ground. He's going to come out with it 9 times out of 10 and get it down into the forward line pretty quickly, and that was a young Lee Matthews.
John, as a speaker, as an orator, Peter, and I've been lucky enough to hear him when he was coach of North Melbourne, but he's a terribly inspiring speaker.
Yeah, I think the thing without him even trying, John, is just about everybody I know that knew John or knows John is in awe of him, and he had that. He just oozed respect and like, I've never known of anyone ever to question anything he says or to have the courage to dispute anything he says. It was just that everything he said was believable, and I think that was a huge asset that he had as a player, as a coach, and as when he was at the commission, the AFL commission. So, you know, he was that sort of person. You just couldn't help but be in awe of him. And And I think that's where he kept everybody grounded because of that attitude and that ability that he had.
So did he ever get any sense of anger towards you? Did he want you to do something on the ground you weren't doing, or did he ever express that to you?
No, he didn't. But Ken Peace wrote a short story about an occasion that I didn't know about, where he said to Norm Lord to go out and tell me to play in front and chase, or I'd be off. And Norm was on the way out. Jack McLeod. This is allegedly all this, because as I say, I didn't know it actually happened. But according to the urban myth, Jack McLeod turned around and said, "Johnny's kicked six." And according to Ken Peace's story, the message went from John to Norm Lord, who was on his way out, to me to come back, and then to go out and tell me to keep doing what I was doing. Now, you know, I stress the fact that I never knew that happened, but it was in a book that Ken wrote. I know I've been amused and by that story for many, many years.
Did he have favourite players? I remember young Brem was one that he loved, Ian Brem. And typically they seemed to be the blokes who went very, very hard at the ball, and heaven help anyone who got in the way, like Lee.
Brem's was... I used to say my prayers and thank the Lord that I didn't play within a few positions of Brem's position, because when he was coming back from injury... you didn't want to be anywhere near him if you played in any of the positions that he was keen to play in. And I think John liked that, I think.
I'm sure he did. I was going to ask you, 1971, I know your memories are hazy, courtesy of a meeting with Cowboy Neil early in the game. But do you remember anything about John's pre-match address or anything after that?
No. Honestly, John, I can't remember the day. At all. I can remember half time for some strange reason. I can remember in the rooms at half time, but that's it for the day. And, I can't remember the celebration. All I know is that I had a heck of a headache after the game. So,
and a bit less of your ear. When you think of people in footy, Peter, and great people you've met, and you've met most of them, over your journey, which is, as I said, when you came here in 67 to start your career in round two against Carlton, against Wesloffs, and kicked four goals, where does John Kennedy sit in levels of respect?
Look, way at the top of the tree. I couldn't think of anyone that I admire more, I respect more, to be honest. Which puts him pretty high up on the list as far as I'm concerned. The funny part about it is that my first three coaches were my dad, who I played in a team with, followed by a fellow by the name of Trevor Leo, who was so much like John. He and John were both, of course, teachers and I had the utmost respect for both of them. So I was pretty lucky, by the time I got to Hawthorne, I'd had a pretty good grounding from some very, very good coaches, including John.
But you won't have the opportunity to see him, unfortunately, because there's not a function this year in a corona-struck year. But I no doubt you'll make contact with him at some stage.
Oh, yeah. I'm just delighted. This is the first I've known of it. I'm just delighted because, for the reasons I've mentioned, I couldn't think of anyone better. And, I really am thrilled that it couldn't have happened to a nicer person, as far as I'm concerned, or a better person.
He's the perfect person in your eyes to be inducted in as a legend into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, well, and apart from that, John, he's as close as a perfect person I think I've ever met in my life, because on the field, off the field, he ticks every box. I honestly don't know of anybody that's ever had a bad word to say about him, or anybody that's shown the slightest amount of lack of respect for him. And that's pretty rare.
Oh, it's extremely rare. It's a great story. We're all very, very happy that it's happened. And, you know, next year, hopefully, you'll get the opportunity to attend the evening together as two legends, along with Lee Matthews, as Hawthorn people who are in that Hall of Fame as legends.
I'm absolutely, as you can probably gather, I'm absolutely thrilled, John, that it is John.
Well, Ando will, of course, be back with his Best of the Best series. He teased us last week with St Kilda's team. We did have, of course, our avid listener, Jasmine, asking when the Saints were going to be front and square, and she's actually sent in her St Kilda team of the last 50 years, thinking that we'd be doing it today, of course, but that will have to wait another week. So we'll catch up with Ando again next week for the Saints' best team of the 50 years. But, boys, it will be next week, same time, same place for both of you as well, with only a few days left to go for footy. So we absolutely cannot wait, and we'll catch you then.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.